Pod is turning four this season, and over the years, we have found that what matters in recovery isn't the hour we spend recording each week.
Or the hour we may spend in a meeting.
It's the other 23 hours of the day where we need to focus our recovery when nobody else is looking.
Our head can be in the clouds, but our feet must be firmly placed on the ground.
Join us on season four as we talk about what we do in recovery with the other 23 hours of the day.
Since 1992, Genesis House has been helping real people heal from addiction on their private recovery campus in beautiful Palm Beach County, Florida. Their family-owned program is accredited by the Joint Commission and offers detox and dual diagnosis treatment in a comfortable and confidential setting. At Genesis House, they focus on treating the underlying causes of addiction. Their comprehensive approach includes psychiatric care, individual and small group therapy, trauma healing techniques, and holistic care including yoga, massage, and animal-assisted therapy. After treatment, their clients enjoy the lifelong support of a nationwide network of Genesis House alumni. Call Genesis House today at 1-800-737-0933 to speak with someone who understands. Visit them on the web at www.genesishouse.net. It's time to start your journey to a long and successful recovery.
LifelongCoachingServices.com is your go-to place for life and wellness coaching to help you achieve your goals, whether they're in business, career, or your personal life. LifelongCoachingServices.com can help you reduce stress, increase focus, and develop positive habits so you can be successful. Check them out today at LifelongCoachingServices.com or call 215-792-4555. LifelongCoachingServices.com. Fear of change.
I'm Carl.
I'm an alcoholic by sobriety.
It's August 22nd, 2014.
My name is Chelsea. I'm an alcoholic, and my sobriety date is February 19th, 2015.
My name is Ellen. I'm an alcoholic, and my sobriety date is June 11th, 2013.
I am an alcoholic. My name is Steve. My sobriety date is February 7th, 2010.
Oh, Steve.
Welcome to Sober Pod.
Okay, we have built it.
We on Sober Pod do not speak for or represent any outside recovery or 12-step groups. All opinions expressed on Sober Pod are those of four deeply flawed individuals with good intentions. We are not health, mental health, nor any sort of health professional. Something like that.
Well, Chelsea,
honestly, if you ever thought we were professionals up to this point, if this isn't your first episode, that's your fault. But thanks for listening anyway. And as always, we advise you to listen in moderation. Hello, everybody. It's Steve joining you here again on one of our customary weekly episodes. This one's going to be a bit different. I'm sure as you noticed at the very beginning, unless it was worked in after the fact, you did not hear Carl, Chelsea, and Ellen chiming in with their sobriety dates. Of course, they are going to be on the episode, but I am not currently able to be on the show at the same time as they are when they do their standard, their usual weekly recording. It's not worth going into all the details, but we've worked it out so I can participate in this week's episode, and I'm very grateful for it. And what I will be doing is opening the show here, given my thoughts on fear. And I was going to say, perhaps talk a little bit about the fear of change, maybe how my relationship with fear has changed, and maybe rattle off a few questions that Ellen, Chelsea, and Carl can then respond to if they choose to do so. I'd like to ideally leave them with some at the end, but if any come to mind during the course of it, those are probably.
Oh, geez. I'm sorry. My bad. I got it. Okay. Does everybody know what's going on here?
Yes.
So Steve is, we've downloaded Steve's artificial intelligence, and we have, so Steve does not exist any longer. He just exists in the Ethernet. And basically, so this is the idea, is that we have downloaded him to the computer. He's not really like alive per se, but he's like, you know, he's got a bunch of tubes hooked up to him. He, you know, just a bunch of electrodes sticking out of his hoo-ha, because this is where all the best intelligence comes from. And so basically what it is Steve has recorded this on his phone, and we are now trying to what he did is he talked about fear, and we are going to answer some questions. So we're going to be interrupting, much like we just did, and we are we're going to be answering the questions of Steve. So you're going to have to feel this out a little bit. You know, every once in a while, Steve, you know, his voice gets all weird and it sounds like a robot, which is really strange because it's just the phone that he's on, I guess. I don't know. But it could be that, you know, that's how we had to rebuild him in order to get him on the show. Anyway, so I'm going to let him continue on talking here, talking about fear. So here he is.
Probably one to pick those up because I can't think of any offhand to mention at the end. So we'll just see what I come up with. Anyway, so it's October. We're talking about fear. That's the theme. As I mentioned, two things were coming to my mind as I was contemplating what to talk about regarding fear. And the first one had to do with fear of change. And the fear of change, that's a phrase that, you know, I'm sure everyone listening to this and Carl, Chelsea and Ellen, myself included, not only have we heard it, perhaps we've said it or we know someone that said it or we've said something akin to it. Like maybe it's not I fear change. Maybe it's I hate change. I don't like change. I resist change. It's all kinds of stuff. And what does that have to do with fear? Well, I thought about it in the context of fear of change. And in what's going on with me lately and where my recovery is, and I'm just going to use that term all inclusively. It includes my alcoholism and it includes my SPS. It's just my recovery. It's all part of my life. You know, I'm not going to go to that distinction of saying which one is which, at least not in the purpose of this episode. Maybe I'll change my mind on that later. But one of the most important things we're working on right now is identifying distorted thinking and making sure to take the time to assess whether or not something is true. Now, to me, this sort of just came about, this thought came to me in a roundabout sort of way, just because I've been asking a lot of questions of myself and my own thoughts lately. And that thought of fear of change and I don't like change and all that stuff came to mind. And I thought about, well, I've had jobs where I had a boss I didn't like. And all of a sudden one day that boss didn't show up. And that boss didn't show up because they got fired, they got laid off, they got whatever. They were gone. All I knew is I didn't have to put up with that person that day or anymore. Now, whether or not the next boss was whoever they were, irregardless, that day, I sure as hell didn't fear or mind change. Let's say the dog next door has been raising hell all day, barking, annoying you. Everyone can, I'm sure, relate to some version of that. And all of a sudden, they stop barking. Or maybe the family moves and the dog's not there anymore. It's quiet for a while. I don't fear or hate that change. Someone surprises me and brings me lunch and I don't have to go out and pick it up myself. Well, I don't fear or mind that change, you know, changing my plans. So it's not that I fear or don't like or resist change. So why do I say fear or resist change? Well, because maybe there are some things that change that I don't like. Now, that's a different concept. Identifying what are the things that change that I fear or don't like. And things would be like asking myself about asking myself things about, well, I mean, it's looking like I'm going to have to face a medical retirement, if I'm lucky, but going on disability, my job is officially being separated because we've hit that point. They've given me time and it's at the end of the line with the health circumstances. So anyway, I don't like that change. But when I was at that job, I sure as hell had plenty of days where I was applying for other jobs and hoping to get an interview and hoping to do something else and looking forward to having time off. And even the thought in those circumstances, I didn't mind the idea of changing that job. I sure as hell didn't. Hell, even while I was on disability, when this was all starting, I was still applying for new jobs, hoping I'd have a new one to go back to because I didn't want to go back to the old one. Yet I don't like losing it because it's relevant to the change that's happening and under what circumstances. Saying I just don't like it whole cloth, like I just don't like change whole cloth, or I don't, or I fear change whole cloth. You might think it's, you know, well, what's the big deal with that? It's just, it's a shorthand. But what the value I'm finding in it is that by identifying what the actual fear is, by getting to the specific of it, by delving in and asking those questions that parse out the determinative factors of what ends up being the truth, leads to a much more peaceful mind, because then I can see problems in a new light and I can start looking for solutions. And I'm still very new to all of this. Like, so I may not be doing it justice at all to speak to the benefits I'm getting, but I think that was the point I wanted to make about change initially, was that I do not fear change. I fear change relevant to the circumstances and relevant to the circumstances of the change and what's changing. I don't want shit that's comfortable to change. That I might fear. I might fear losing something I've already got, but there's plenty of other stuff where I don't mind it at all. But when I'm not willing to admit what those specific things are, I might just be spared. I might think I'm sparing myself and giving myself comfort, but really I'm denying myself clarity. That's what I'm coming to understand about it. Different folks feel different ways. That's all right. I'm the one talking on the podcast right now, so y'all just wait your damn turn.
Talk about waiting turns. Ellen, what is the SPS that Steve is going through? What is the deal?
SPS is a rare diagnosis. It's a rare disease called stiff person syndrome.
Hey, now.
Yeah. Before that, it, you know, it was referred to as like Tin Man syndrome.
Oh,
yeah.
You know, I think I have heard that before. I never heard stiff man though.
Yeah. Stiff person syndrome, is the new term, but it used to be Tin Man syndrome. And it's characterized by muscle spasms and anxiety. One leading to the other and the other leading to the other. And it's, so yeah, that's what he's referring to when he says SPS. I really like the way he brings up the fact that, yeah, we don't mind positive changes, right? Or changes that we think are good.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it does beg the question, like, what are you really afraid of? You know, I mean, I guess there's people that are afraid of positive changes too,
or maybe just
not knowing
change.
Not knowing they're going to be positive. Right. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, I really miss having Steve around for the comments. So I think again, accessing his, you know, artificial intelligence, anytime we say stiff man, stiff person syndrome, we should play this.
Right? Diggity. Ha ha ha. Diggity. Ha ha ha.
How's that?
Love it.
Is that close? So, okay. Yeah. When we talked about, because what I think he's trying to get to is, again, like the we fear change except for when it is, you know, when it benefits us, right? Like, it depends on our perspective, I think, is what we're really looking at. Like, so fear is relative. Is that the idea? You know, and I think one of the things I came across, a quote, I was reading this book. It was actually on courage, believe it or not. And it was talking about, and it just, this quote slapped me in the face so hard. I had to write it down, and it was, whatever you're not changing, you're choosing. So, and I was just like, oh, that hurts so bad. Cause I was like, cause you know, it's like, so it's almost the opposite of this, like, you know, fear of change thing. It's like,
that sucks. I reject that.
Do you really, or do you just say it because
I
you
do
don't
reject
hear it?
That? Yeah,
because you don't want to hear it, or because it's not true. Which one do you?
I don't know.
Well, I do feel like if something is in your life, you know, it's like because what Steve would talk about, like his talks about is like he's in a shitty job, right? And, you know, and he talks about it basically like this shitty boss that quits or gets fired or whatever, his brakes don't work anymore for some mysterious reason. Right. So then the dude ends up not coming into work. And now this change is something that Steve's going to embrace. But now if you didn't do anything about it before, right, if you didn't move towards changing that, so whatever you're not changing, you're choosing. So really, in the time that he had this shitty boss, he was actually choosing to go into work so I think there is fear of change in that still. I think that there's still a fear of change of, like, you know, not being motivated to update your resume, not being like, you know, you're willing to tolerate like the devil that you know, you know, versus, you know, because
a point there.
Because one of the things that, you know, we posted an article on silverpod.com, which is in the members section. And like one of the very first things in terms of the strategies to, like, you know, really work on your fear of change is to think positive thoughts. So rather than thinking about, like, you know, oh, I'll never get a new job, why update my resume? You should say, shit, I'm going to update my resume because, wow, who knows, like, the possibilities of a new job. Wow, just think what that... You know, wow, that could get me into a whole different direction, or wow, I could be, you know, I don't know, my whole work schedule could change, my whole life could change, I could get more money, I could get blah, 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 more benefits, who knows, right? But we tend to think negatively. We tend to think, like, you know, when we're in fear of change, we're like, oh, I don't, you know, why bother? Oh, the grass is always greener, so why should I do it? You know, that kind of a thing. So that's what I wonder. Hey, I just want to...
Yeah, it is a perspective thing for sure. I mean, the motivating behind it.
Certainly. So, Chelsea, do you have anything to share with Steve setting up here?
I just like that he brought up there are good and bad changes. At least that's how we perceive them. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite quotes, and I don't know who it's by, is the only constant in life is change. Mm-hmm. And so, I think I resist change because I like things the way they are. I'm comfortable. Even if I'm unhappy with something, sometimes I will just keep, you know, doing that and choosing that, like you were saying, Carl, because it's, I'm comfortable. And me having to make a change and putting myself in a position where I'm no longer comfortable is scary. And even if it's good for me and I'll, you know, in the long run, it'll be better for me and I'll like it more, I still don't want to make that initial change because I don't want to be out of my comfort zone. So I definitely resonate with what you said, Carl, about choosing, if you're not changing.
So I wish I could remember like the whole story. There is and tell me if you guys have heard this one, because I would love to, if it strikes up for you, because I can't remember the whole thing, but it's basically about this farmer. And this farmer, you know, he has like three cows wander off, right? And then like his neighbor's like, oh shit, you know, you got three cows that wander off. Like, oh, you know, isn't that terrible? And he goes, well, you know, we'll see. Right. You know, it turns out that those three cows wander back with like eight more cows. Right. So they like suddenly bring back eight more cows. And then, the cows are home, and, you know, he has a new child, and, you know, and his child is growing up, and, you know, his child gets he loses his leg. Right. And then and his neighbors are like, oh, my God, isn't that terrible? Like, you know, your son like lost his leg. And he goes, well, we'll see, you know. And basically, in that following, winter, there was a war, and he was not, you know, taken to war because he had lost his leg, you know, cause, and so again, It really is about perspective, isn't it? It's like really, it's not about what happens to us. It's how we respond to it that makes all the difference in terms of like, you know, having that, like that farmer having that wait and see attitude about like, well, is it good or is it bad? I do not know. And that's where I think that you're at, Chelsea, to say like there is good and positive changes. And it's how I think we identify with those. And that's what I liked that. But what Steve was talking about too, is like, you know, but he does, but we all have fears. Let's not get that wrong. Like that's the other thing, is I want to make sure that we ground this in reality. We can't just be like, well, you know, lost my leg. We'll see, you know, fucking, you know, don't you know. I mean, we're all human, right?
It kind of reminds me of the old saying of everything happens for a reason, right? And we don't know what that reason
shit.
Is.
I hate that shit, especially the other one, right? Which is like, the other one is like, you're right where you're supposed to be, you know?
Right.
Like, oh, you motherfucker.
Miserable, you know? And just hating.
So let's have Steve go on and we'll see what more you can drum up for us here. Hold on a second.
That's right. I can be pretty confident and pretty pushy when I'm the only person in a room. You know, don't want to brag, but I rule the roost in here at the moment by myself. Talking to an iPhone. It's what I do. So I guess there's a question you can begin with. Are there fears that you haven't identified? Are your fears actually identified? Can you narrow them down? Can you be more specific? Does it actually make sense? Or are there versions of the thing that you're scared of that you realize you're not scared of? And if, okay, you're not scared of it as a whole, then what parts of it are you scared of? And things like that, you know? It's just questions to ponder. I wouldn't spend too much time. I'm not a professional. I'll just end it with that. I'm not a professional. So I really hope that doesn't end up putting you in the loony bin. Anyway, moving on.
All right. I think he's going to go on to the second part. But so I guess he asked a series of questions there. Like, are there fears you have not identified? I guess that... It's like, how do I know? You know, like, you know, so, you know, and I think that there are, let's give a really good example. Cause his next one says, are your fears actually identified? Can you narrow them down and get to the specifics of your fear? And I'll give you a good example. And just me from being completely vulnerable, bare bones, honesty. I have a fear of losing my job. I've had a fear of losing my job ever since I was been born. Ever since I've had a job, I've had a fear of losing my job. I don't care what job it is. I don't want to lose it. And I don't know what it does for me in terms of my thinking. But, you know, I can really go back to when I was 12 years old. And I'll tell you, this is exactly, I think, where it comes from. And the reason why I know this is because I've written some of this stuff down. I've actually put it down on paper. I've actually spent time in my journal, and I've spent time in, like, you know, ACA groups, ACA like workbook studies, AA, like, you know, my fears lists and those types of things. You know, I fear losing my job because what money means to me is more freedom. Money means more autonomy. Right? Like, I can do things that I'm not dependent upon somebody else. Because when I was growing up, before I found the ability to have money and, you know, work with money, and that was at 12 years old, I found that. And I was like, thank God for money, because now I no longer depend upon my family for the things that I would want or desire or need. Right. And I could buy I could buy a car battery if I needed to. I could buy fucking shoes. I could, you know, whatever, right? Dealing drugs was really good for me. So I use money for like a lot of different things. And I, you know, and it's security for me. Money means security for me, because money means safety to me, because money got me away from those dysfunctional people that fucking manage my life. And so today, when I think about losing my job, I think about, oh, shit, I'm going to fall immediately into this dysfunctional nature. Shit's going to be wrong, you know, because when I don't have money, shit goes poorly, right? Just so I've always worked really hard to keep that. So I know that stuff from writing it all down and from like identifying. So it's not necessarily losing my job, is it? Like, what do I actually fear? I don't fear losing my job. I fear, you know, dysfunction and losing safety and those types, because I equate that stuff. And the truth is, I would probably, if I lost my job, I don't think my wife is going to start beating me saying, go get a job, motherfucker. Like, I just don't think it's going to happen. So I don't know. What about you guys? Do you guys have any of those types of fears? Have you guys ever identified your fears to that way? Like Steve's talking about, like actually identified them and narrowed them down and got specific about what fear, and especially more recently, have you guys been able to do that?
Recently, yes. I was, when the opportunity presents itself and I find myself getting angry over something that I shouldn't get angry over or upset, let's just say, usually there's a fear behind it. Right. And I have to kind of uncover that. Recently, we received a small medical bill, and Steve had been in the position to, I was handling, you know, the finances and calling the places and all that, but he was getting better. So I gave him this small bill to handle, and I thought he would handle it the way I would handle it, but he did not. And he's not here to defend himself in spirit. No. Anyway, the whole end of it was, you know, he just decided to pay the bill instead of calling the insurance company to pay the bill. He just paid it because it was just easier. Right. And I was very upset about that. And I had to look at why I was upset about that, because I mean, he was doing the responsible thing, right? He paid it. There's no, you know, I shouldn't be angry, right? I shouldn't be upset, but he didn't handle it the way I would have handled it, which was having the insurance. Because, you know, you might need $50 sometime, right? And it was just $50. And but really the fear was my fear of poverty, right?
We're in the same boat. It's my fear of
being back to that broke college student that had three jobs and was working three jobs and was going to school full time and supporting a gambling addict.
Mm.
And that's where it took me back to. And so I had to own that and, of course, apologize to Steve.
Mm.
But that is a real, real fear. And I discovered that probably a week ago. I mean, the longer you stay sober, you start to realize these things. And the cool part is just not, you know, whereas like before, I would just grab a drink and start chugging away and not even deal with it. But now that I'm aware of it, it's much, much better.
Chelsea, I think Steve just phoned this in. I don't know where this is coming from, but he just sent this audio file. It's really, hold on a second. I think he's trying to reply to Ellen.
My only fear lately is getting caught whacking it while I am on hold paying these stupid hospital bills.
Thanks, Steve, for letting us know what you do on the, maybe those people.
Always so vulnerable, that yeah, Steve. Yeah.
He just lets it all hang out there, doesn't he? You know, literally.
That's how he gets out of paying some of the medical bills. Yeah, just, you know, but I didn't want to let that secret out.
Just gets on the phone and starts whacking it. All right. So what about you, Chelsea? Have you identified any of your fears and really got to the specifics of what they might be?
Well, I'll just bring up the most recent one that I can think of is my brother was in the ER a couple times last week and wasn't doing well. Couldn't figure out what it was like, what was going on. And he started telling my mom like his last will and testament. And he's like, I'm going to die. Mm. And, you know, he's never said that before. And he's intellectually disabled. And so things that he was going to give, were action figures. And, you know, I was getting all of the, Avengers action figures, but, really the, you know, I had so many things going on and that was just one more thing like, oh great. Now my brother's saying like, he's going to die. And in my mind, I'm like, you know, fearful of that. Like if he's saying that, then he really is sick because he never complains and he never says stuff like that. And, you know, I was fearful of it all week. And, I think part of the reason why I get so fearful is, when I first started getting sober, I had this crazy thought, you know, who would have to die for it to be okay for me to drink again? Mm. And it was my brother. And so part of me thinks like, oh, well, if he dies, what will that mean? Like, am I going to be able to stay sober? Am I going to be able to carry on in life and not give up? And I think a lot of that has to do with me kind of being a caregiver to him, like just all the way growing up. We have a really strong bond, and the fear of losing someone, what will that mean for me? You know, I'm going to feel empty. I'm going to be missing something. And so I think there's a lot to peel away with that onion. But yeah, that's my most recent one. And then just kind of seeing how he isn't always well taken care of. And it's frustrating. And I have a fear that, yeah, just that he's going to die. I mean, that's been a fear my whole life. So that's my take on it.
That's one big fear of change, honestly, that death is like a huge fear. And you know, I thought I was going to die a lot. Actually, my personal stuff, you know, when I was drinking, I thought that was a big part of like, you know, Jason, who I started a podcast with, he wanted to meet in Blythe because it was halfway between like where he was and I was. And I always felt like if I actually made it there and we made it there because we were still drinking, if I made it there, I would more than likely not come back. That's always kind of always felt like just like that shit was going to happen because I would drink myself into a fucking coma, I'm sure. Just how we drank together, it was just, you know, if I would have had that time, it would have been terrible. So I think, you know, death is definitely something that, you know, can preoccupy your mind. It can definitely be something that is impactful, especially if it's a loved one. So I'm sorry to hear that he's handing out his action figures. You know, are you sad that you're gonna get the Avengers and not some other ones or something? Or do you?
I was hoping for like some women, like action figures.
I mean, there's a Black Widow. It's kind of
Batman. You
know. Okay. Well. All right. So then I guess that brings us to the second or the third part of that question, which is, do they make sense? Do your fears make sense? Or are they versions of the thing you're actually scared of? Like, you know, what parts are you scared of in that? And I think we answered a little bit of some of that, but I think that we all have to ask ourselves, does the fear make sense? So Chelsea, in your take on this, you know, with your brother, like you've been afraid that he's going to die almost your entire life, right? It's been, you know, It's on the cusp there all the time. So does that make sense for you? Is it something that's a reasonable thing to consider that way?
It depends. I would say, of course, it's reasonable because we're all mortal, right? Yeah, and he's at a higher risk. He has been his whole life, you know.
Yeah.
Heart defect, heart transplant, you know, he's at risk, you know. More risk than just anyone else. But is he going to die because he's had like severe diarrhea or because he has a cold? It's possible, but am I being realistic? Like, is this as serious as it's been in the past or it could be? And so a lot of it's just anxiety, and anxiety is just kind of irrational fear. Mm-hmm. And so I try to stay focused on like being logical, like, okay, does this make sense or am I putting emotion behind it? Is it emotion driven or is it logical, you know? But I think it can be both in some mm-hmm. situations. It's just kind of how I'm responding to it that matters.
Yeah, I personally feel like, you know, it's okay to like look at those things from like the worst that can happen. Like you prepare yourself to say like, you know, okay, and I've done it, and I don't know yeah, maybe God, I hope I'm not the only one, because I'm going to feel really weird right now. But you know, I please, if I am the only one between us three, please just fucking say I'm not. Anyway, so like I imagine, okay, like what would I do if my children died, or what would I do if my wife died? And I just think about like how, you know, and not in I'm looking forward to it in any kind of way, but I say to myself, like, you know, to be prepared for those things so that I'm not completely taken by surprise if those things were to happen. So I don't think that it's unreasonable to ask yourself those things, but I do think it's unreasonable to react to those thoughts like unrationally and be able to, and eventually like call into work sick because I can't fucking stomach the thought anymore, you know, completely sober. I think that would be, you know, that's definitely crossing a line that definitely needs some attention. So, so what about you guys? Do you guys ever have those kinds of thoughts where you think like, okay, there's a rational, like I have to prepare for the worst, even though I know that it's not going to happen. And you know what I mean? Is there that
yes.
kind of,
yes. thing?
What about you, Ellen? You got a grimacing face right now.
I tend to prepare for the worst usually. But you know, prepare for the worst, hope for the best kind of thing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I guess I'm still wrapping my head around that, but I mean, it's just like maybe with older family members, I might ask myself that. I don't really think about it with younger family members just because of the, like Chelsea was talking about, the risk. You know, it's not as common, I guess, you know, for the younger folk to pass away as it is maybe the older folk. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't really spend too much time imagining it or anything like that. I try to stay away from those thoughts.
Those like really dark thoughts kind of a deal.
Yeah.
I believe me, I do not like them when they come, but they come. And right. that's just kind of part of it. And so, you know, I it's not like I'm looking forward to it, but there's times when you kind of go like, we're driving on the freeway and there's this fucking car jumped out at me and like my youngest daughter at her first concert we were going to, it was raining like a motherfucker. And like, I had to slam on the brakes and there was a fucking car. There was a truck coming dead at us on the freeway. And we were like going dead at that truck. And it was in fucking insane. And I had my arm hurt so bad from holding her back, even though she had her seatbelt on. My arm hurt so bad because it just strained to like keep her. And I know I wasn't keeping her in the chair either. Right. So like as much as you think your arm is going to be like superhuman dad arm at that moment, it fucking wasn't. And that shit scared the shit out of me. And I thought, oh my God, like what if I was the loser in that, you know? And, you know, and it just seems, and the whole rest of that day was just so surreal for me too. I never forget the day either. But, you know, that's the stuff that, you know, you got to go, wow, like my whole life would have changed in that moment. Like everything would have changed in that moment. So I try to prepare myself for those things. And again, like you said, Ellen, hope for the best, you know, not get lost in it in dark, morbid thought, but it comes. So I address
You're not sleeping in a coffin, are you, Carl?
Not tonight, but it is October. It's October, baby.
I hear they're very comfortable, but come on.
So Steve's got a second part to this, and I want to make sure we play his second part here. So let's hear him out.
So. That is not admissible in court, what I just said, by the way. Because if I say it here on the podcast, that means it's true. Moving on. So the next thing I mentioned was my relationship with fear now, and how my alcoholism showed me my relationship with fear was how preventative and damaging it was to my behavior, my thoughts. I mean, everything. It was already something I knew was always a factor in my life. These tremendous fears, the social anxieties, the things that fuel our drinking or part of it anyway, and so on and so forth. But now my relationship with fear, with my stiff person syndrome, there is a trigger for the symptoms, which is anxiety. There's several triggers, but one of them is anxiety. And the troubling thing about anxiety is that it can also sort of, it can be a garnish on the side of the other triggers as well. Like, so if, you know, there's a sound that might cause a symptom that I'm familiar with, then there's anxiety about hearing that. And if there's a certain touch or feeling that I know might be associated with a trigger, then there's an anxiety that can accompany that and anticipation of as well. And I'm using anxiety as sort of synonymous with fear right here, but I'm sure it seems it should seem pretty clear that that's a problem. That would put anxiety as something to definitely needs addressing, and that my fear also needs to be well managed, because my body my body will react in a way that is disadvantageous to my health. And keeping an eye on that, I learned was a priority in AA, and I sloughed off on it from time to time, just like anybody else will. And you pay the price for it. And I'm relearning that price with a new condition, except now it's a physical price. And that I have to learn to be on top of that again. And it involves, again, we don't like looking our scary shit in the face. I said that before on the last episode I did. We don't like looking at it. We'd like, you know, prefer turn away and ignore it. But I thought about it as like, there are healthy fears. We've established that. We know that. But in order to know the healthy fears from the unhealthy fears, you've got to examine what the fear is. Is it true? Is it valid? Is this real? Is this a dog that'll bite you? Or is this just a dream you're having about a dog that'll bite you? You know, like it can have that effect to examine that fear. And you can wake up from that dream and discover that damn dog in the dream can't ever bite you because it was just a dream. And I would advise you, I mean, obviously, this work can get intense. So I'd advise you at least start. AA has its own version of doing this kind of stuff. Plenty of other programs do as well, but also with a professional, also a very good way to go because the work can get intense. But there are certainly day-to-day fears and anxieties we all have that we can certainly discuss here openly on the show. So the question I would have come from that is, how do you distinguish your real valid fears from fears that actually have no basis in reality? Fears that upon closer examination actually aren't real, I guess would be my next question. So with that, I will also provide, I'm not sure how this part's going to work, if Carl's going to cut it and then put it at the end of the show, or if I'm just wrapping it up here, not sure.
Oh, I guess that's my cue. That's my cue. So the question on the table for, and I'm going to at random pick a person at random, Chelsea. So how do you distinguish valid fears versus imagined fears? How do you do that? Because I don't know how to do that. No, I know how to do that. But how do you do it?
Well, I would say that, you know, if it's a valid fear, it's something that is reasonable and is a possibility that's not like completely out there, you know, like, am I going to break my arm and then get hit by a car? Probably not, but I can imagine that. And it is possible. I guess it's just kind of like, my fears are valid, when there's a real consequence coming up, I guess. And then, you know, if it's an imagined fear, it's kind of like, well, it could happen, but I'm kind of embellishing. I'm kind of getting off track here. I'm just letting my mind kind of come up with these crazy ideas and catastrophize. Like, yeah, Carl, I see you pointing at yourself. I feel the same way. I will come up with these crazy scenarios, and I have to acknowledge that they are crazy and I am crazy, and then just let them go. A valid fear is something that, you know, I think can be a good thing. I think it can motivate us because, you know, if say like you are fearful that you, are going to, you know, what's a good example? I guess kind of like if you're worried about losing your job, well, that's kind of a healthy fear because maybe you will, start improving or make some changes. And so I think, that's a valid fear and you should probably do something about it. But an imagined fear, if there's not anything you can do about it, then you're just letting it occupy your mind, you know? So I don't know if that really answered the question, but I'm, that's my take on it.
So, no, I get what you're saying on the, the valid fear. Like, so if I have a, how do I distinguish my valid fear versus my imagined fear? Like, so I will look at it and go, okay, look, talk about the job thing. I go, okay, you know, first of all, and it happens all the time, especially with sponsors. Sponsors are great for this shit because it's like, you know, especially like Steve used to tell me, like, I used to sit there and say, oh, you know, I'm going to lose my job. And he'd go, oh yeah, really? Like, you know, how do you know that? And I would be like, well, I just, you know, I just know. Right. Like, oh, you know, I have a sense, you know, or whatever.
Telepathically communicated with the boss.
Yeah. Like
Steve's not big on feelings.
No. And he's not big on your intuition in this regard. Right. Nope. You know, because unless somebody has personally said, and so that's what I really loved about this stuff. Like, I'll say I remember one time I was like, yeah, my wife's going to fucking leave me. There's no way around this shit. Like, I just like, I know she's going to leave me. Like she can't stand to be around me. We're always fucking arguing. And he's like, when did she say that to you? And I'd be like, well, never. Right. You know? And I go, well, she's threatened to leave me before, but in the middle of an argument, I go, yeah. How long ago? I don't know, like 2 or 3 months ago. You know? So he'd be like, so she actually hasn't said that to you. And I'm like, no. And he goes, so you can do yourself a favor right now. Trust the words coming out of people's mouths and not the words that you think are coming out of people's mouths. Right. Mm-hmm. And that was like, oh fuck. Like, so, and I really have like, even with my job, I have had to go, all right, what do I know for sure? What have they told me for sure? And really, it does not compare to what goes on in my head. Has on a daily basis, even sometimes, right? It has no fuck, like, you know, there's no way, like, and then if it ever did come to that point, I would be like, oh yeah, shit, gotta get a new job because I just heard everything that my head just told me, you know? So you know what I'm saying? It's kind of like that weird part. It's like, I make a lot of shit up in here. One of the things that I use as a, how do I distinguish the valid fears versus imagined fears is I use sponsorship or somebody else because, again, I've always said it. And that's why, you know, AA is so really cool for me because even though, like, you think, oh, I'm in AA and these people are fucking crazy, which most of them are, but there's a few people that, you know, their crazy matches my crazy. We can be crazy together. And that's the other thing. So when I bounce it off of this other dude, you know, again, I'm inside of a glass and I can't read the label, but this other dude can read it like that. And again, vice versa in some cases, right? You know, so my sponsor now, even same kind of stuff. I will be like, oh yeah, I think my boss is going to fire me or whatever. And he'll be like, well, did they say that? You know, like, did you get an email? Like, yeah, like it's like, and it really
nobody believes you, Carl.
Well, because it's so, because
only you.
It's only, well, because here's the thing.
Only you believe you.
If I'm going to distinguish it, a lot of my stuff is, we talk about this in AA, real versus imagined. And a lot of my shit is imagined because I am very capable. I go the extra mile to deliver work. I'm very skilled. I don't hesitate. I get shit done. I'm a doer. And boy, that's a hard thing to lose in a company, you know? And, you know, because that's definitely a billable person. So, and these people know this about me. They know that I care about those things. They know what my drives and pushes are. So when I say stuff like that, they're kind of like, really, Carl? Like, you know, are you, you know, and again, that's my mind that fucks with me. It's seriously, you know, that low self-esteem that still drives in there and, you know, meet me, you know, it's that fucked up. My brain is out to kill me and it's out to tell me a million different things that, you know, want to sabotage me in a million different ways. So got to pay attention to that shit. So that's my main tool for distinguishing those fears. And again, writing in my journal has become really helpful in like the last, you know, 200 days, I think has been really cool. Trying to figure out what I truly feel about something, that has been a really good tool. And then, you know, just, I guess, trying to stay in the present, you know, considering backup plans, like what if I have to go get another job, right? Oh shit, I should start doing shit now, because if it is a real concern and not completely imagined, I should actually be an active involvement to change that should I actually lose my job. So just because I don't want to end up in poverty.
You might get a better one.
And yeah, think positively. Could be, and it'll be a good. So what about you, Alan? Where do you, how do you distinguish?
Usually, the way I distinguish it is, you know, if my mind is starting to go off on these, you know, spats, I can feel my body, you know, tense up. And then I take a deep breath and I ask myself one question. Is this happening right now? So if it's not happening right now, I'm not going to waste any more thought on it, because time is my most precious commodity. I have very little time between all the responsibilities I have. I really don't have time to waste on something that's not happening right now. So that's usually how I handle the fear. So if
staying in the present
at all times, if possible. So, and if it's something that does come up that I'm afraid of, you know, kind of, I wonder, like, fear is kind of useless, because it's like, well, this already happened. Why am I afraid of it again? Because I already proved that I made it through the last time. Right. Mm-hmm. So why is this a reoccurring thing? And that's kind of where I'll go back to, you know, childhood, kind of look through the ACA lens and go, okay, this keeps reoccurring, this fear, like fear of poverty or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And why? Why is that happening? It's somewhere really, really deep. And I'm going to try and root it out so that it doesn't happen again. But I think all fears kind of tie to the same things. Fear of the unknown. Like, you know, when I first got sober, I was afraid that I would lose all my friends, quote unquote. I didn't really have any friends.
But you were going to lose them.
There were just people I talked to at the bar, bar every Friday night.
Yeah.
I wouldn't really call them friends. So it was, you know, it was like Steve said, the fear of change. And even though I know, like, if I stopped drinking, that it was healthier for me because my doctor said so. But even that was like, even knowing that it was going to be positive for me in some ways still was hard for me to digest in other ways, such as, you know, losing friendships or losing what I thought was a good time. But the interesting thing was I had never tried being sober. So how would I even know what that looked like? So for all of you out there who are trying to be sober and you're poo-pooing the idea of a meeting, maybe, or how do you really know unless you try, right?
Yeah. So, and we talked about a fear of getting sober on the last episode too, where it's like, you know, It has its own imagined, you know, set of circumstances, especially because you're coming from drinking and you're not really used to dealing with talking about a rational mind, you know, fuck. Like there's just no way to get from here to there. So, I totally hear you in terms of, distinguishing your valid fears versus, you know, your imagined fears. It's definitely something that is, something you got to work towards, something you got to work on. It's something you got to get accustomed to. It doesn't come overnight either, right? You know, it's like, it's funny. I think we sit here, we talk about a new sobriety. If we're going to talk about new sobriety, like I love it how a lot of like fucking newcomers, and me. Like, I like fucking a lot of newcomers. I sit there and like, we always talk about this past tense shit. For some reason, we sit in fucking meetings or even on this podcast that we'll be talking about. Oh, you know, when I was drinking, you know, I did this, that, and this, and the other. It's always this past tense bullshit. And to be honest, if we look to last week really, you know, carefully, we could be talking about the present tense a fucking lot more. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you know, fucking,
just without a drink.
Yeah, just without, hopefully. You know, totally like that. So I think it's sometimes we fool ourselves a lot when we're sitting here, because, you know, a newcomer, like, I wanted you to ask yourself really honestly, like, you know, do you fear change today? Don't be talking about, oh, now I got 6 months sober and I fucking, you know, oh, I used to fear change. You know, ask yourself, I mean, because seriously, like, you know what I mean? That's how it goes. It's like, what I love is, like, ask yourselves honestly, if, like, if you're fucking doing AA, like, I didn't really know it, but I really feared change about, like, you know, when I looked up at those steps, like, I was a year sober by the time I did my fifth step. And I was so fucking fearful of 6, 7, 8, 9, you know, because I didn't know what that process was going to do to me. I didn't know, like, what it meant to, like, get rid of these quote unquote defects. Like, I still work on not cussing. Right. Like, I sit there and think to myself, I still have a fear of changing that. Well, who am I if I don't cuss? Who am I if I'm not the street kid? Who am I if I'm not the one that, like, you know, has all that, you know, shit going on? Dude, I tell people, I haven't been on the street in 30 fucking years. But you know what? I still have that identity. I still hold that thought. Like, well, who am I if I'm not that dude, you know? And I still have a fear of change over a lot of that stuff. So it's funny, but, you know, today I really do see it differently. I see myself adulting. I see myself able to be in those situations and not throw down a big old F-bomb or say the shit that I want to say because it's going to
hurt. We'll buy you a skateboard for Christmas, Carl.
No, you know, I can't do that anymore because of my balance.
You can be a street kid again.
Yeah, no, turning 50, I can't do that.
So, hey, I've got one more thing to say about, like, distinguishing that I just thought was kind of like what you were mentioning, Carl, about, well, did your wife actually say that to you? Well, one thing that I do to help distinguish between the two is just verbalize it. Like, hey, are you mad at me? Hmm. Or, hey, like, am I doing something wrong? And a lot of the time, like, I am imagining it. And if I say, hey, like, are you mad at me? And they're like, no, I'm just having a shitty day. Like, mm-hmm. has nothing to do with you. And I'm like, oh, okay, good. You know, and then that fear goes away. And I think when we verbalize our fears, like, you know, when we're doing work through the steps as well, we stop giving it power over us. You know, when we start talking about the things that we fear, it no longer, like, has control over us. So
how scary is that, though? That's so scary to be like, like, you know, because I remember when I first started to do that too, and it was like, you know, oh, like, you know, hey, like, you know, you said this and it really made me feel this way. And then people are like, what? Like, you know, dude, like, you're
yeah,
like, you're giving this shit way too much thought, you know?
And like, I'm trying to be vulnerable.
Yeah. Like, you know, it's like, it is scary to do initially because you don't want people to think, like, well, first of all, I had this ego that I presented and I had this false self that I presented everywhere I went. So if I was to turn to you and say, I'm scared or afraid, or I, you know, or I fear this, boy, that just destroyed everything that held me up. And it was so hard to, like, so talk about fear of change. Like, that's the shit that, like, you know, that sent me into tears a lot of the times, you know, especially if I was trying to hold an image that I thought that I was projecting. And I just, FYI for all you all out there, if you think that you're projecting an image that you are, like, this, that, or the other, believe me, that image does not exist the way you think it does. It fucking totally doesn't.
Don't worry. Everybody knows you're an alcoholic.
Knows your shit. And everybody knows you're a liar. And everybody fucking knows all
the
that
lady,
shit.
The lady at the grocery store, she knows you're an alcoholic.
Yeah, I'm right.
You're not hiding it, sweetheart. You're a wino and it's okay.
Your neighbor.
Join us where the winos run free.
Yeah. The fucking
join us on Sober Pod.
The mailman and the fucking postmaster general, they all fucking know. They all fucking know.
The garbage man.
All right, so Steve's gonna take us home here. Let's try and let's see if this works out. Ready? I forget what he said here, but let's move on.
But over at soberpod.com, we have a members only area.
Oh,
we
shit.
Also have a
he
donate
is finishing
button.
That up.
That's right. We have a donate button. Can you believe that? You don't believe me? Well, then you're gonna have to go to soberpod.com and look for that donate button, and you can donate to the show if you care to do so. If you don't, thank you for listening. We appreciate the support. You can also head on over to the SoberPod Facebook page where we have another page. Huh? We got a page within a page. You go to the SoberPod Facebook page. You look for SoberPod Live. That's where the action is. That's where the good stuff is. That's where the real sobriety is, all right? It's not where the sobriety for the schmucks and the fucking daywalkers is. This ain't your daddy's sobriety. This is real-time sobriety. You go to SoberPod Live.
It's your
daddy's sobriety.
We're
trying to turn that into a sort of perpetual, ongoing meeting, just somewhere where people can hang out, chat about recovery, about their own lives, get to know each other, and just have a nice time. You know what I mean?
Chat with
We're
Steve.
Just trying to have a nice supportive environment.
He's been on there a lot.
Any type of recovery is welcome. Any type of, you know, none of you fucking Narcanon people. All right. You
uh-oh,
guys, I
uh-oh.
Swear to God, you're listening.
Going after Scientology.
It might be my new anxiety talking, but I swear I can feel Narcanon.
Tom Cruise, if you're listening.
To SoberPod taking notes. Anyway.
Narcanons are welcome.
SoberPod Live. We're looking forward to seeing you there. I love making posts there all the time about updates with my SPS, all that good stuff. It is something that's actually helping me quite a bit in my recovery. So I certainly appreciate it being there. And I'm hoping that we can create an environment where someone else can also get that similar support and effect that I am finding. I believe that's everything. Chelsea, you're going to do your own plugs because let's face it, you're Chelsea. I can't do a Chelsea impression. It ain't going to work. People are going to say, it's not Chelsea. How you doing? What are you doing for? You got to knock it off. And I'd be like, hey, what are we doing? This ain't New York.
Friends in recovery. Friends in recovery. Here we go.
And they say, hey, you know, it's a thing we're doing today. So next, we had some sponsors playing at the beginning. That was kind of fun. Anyway, we do other stuff. Stay active, stay sober. See ya.
Peace. Deuces.
See you guys.